how BlackRock became more powerful than the Federal Reserve and the United States government. Now, BlackRock is the largest asset manager in the world, with assets pushing $10 trillion, or more than double the GDP of Germany, which is the fourth largest economy in the world. Now, while the amount of assets under management makes them owners of almost every public company in the United States, it's their strategic moves that have made them much more powerful. In fact, they are the number one most influential and powerful organization in the world today, even more influential and powerful than the Fed and even the US government, as they are back behind the scenes pulling the strings. So what they're doing with their investments and influence is very important to us. If we want to front run their moves and protect our assets, retirement accounts, and our freedoms. So in this video, I'm gonna break down just how influential and powerful BlackRock really is, how they're able to control and evade oversight and sanctions, how they take Fed money and use it in the markets to enrich themselves, how they are working with the World Economic Forum to bring the Great Reset to reality, and I'm gonna show you what they are saying will happen in 2023, what their investment outlook is, and how you should play all this with your own investments. So let's go. All right, welcome back. If you're new to the channel, my name is Mark Moss, and I make these videos to change the way you think about money, change the way you think about all this data that you've been seeing. Now, we're gonna talk about BlackRock, we're gonna talk about the World Economic Forum, lots of scary things. But look, this isn't about being scared. This is about learning what their moves are so we can profit alongside them. Also, this is their plan, this is their goal, this is what's happening. I believe their plans will fail. I believe they're already cracking. There's a lot of pushback to this. And so I've been talking about that a lot. If you're a regular watcher of the channel, then you've seen some of this as well. So I believe their plans will ultimately fail, but we have a chance to profit. We need to know what they're doing to navigate this correctly. So let's go ahead and jump in and see what's going on. All right, BlackRock, I'm calling them the Empire. This is borrowed from Star Wars, you know. The Empire, you know, the Empire and the Rebels and whatnot. So we have the Death Star. This is BlackRock. And as I said in the intro, they are the most influential organization in the world. And I'm saying they're even more influential than the Federal Reserve and more influential and powerful than the government, which you probably say, Mark, that's insane because the government could just shut them down, throw them in prison. You know, the Fed could defund them and all those things, which is true. They could. So they aren't as powerful as the government. But who controls or who pulls the strings in the government? And then we go back to BlackRock, okay? And I'm gonna show you what I'm talking about. As I said in the intro, over $9 trillion in assets under management. It fluctuates a little bit day by day, but it's more than double the GDP of Germany, which is the fourth largest country. So they're massive, massive, massive. They're at the top of this pyramid. Now, just real quick, I like to think of this as fascism, or really a better word would be corporatism. So a lot of people say, oh, Mark, this is capitalism run bad. This is why capitalism is no good. We need to replace capitalism. Of course, World Economic Forum wants to replace capitalism with what they call stakeholder capitalism. We'll come back to that. But this is not capitalism. Capitalism is free markets, free and voluntary exchange, and private property. What this is fascism, or better off, corporatism. The famous fascist Mussolini, he famously said here that fascism should be more appropriately called corporatism because it's a merger of state and corporate power. And so we have state, we have the government, and then corporate, BlackRock, and their power has combined. And so fascism, corporatism, whatever you want to call it, that's what I'm seeing here. All right, now that we've teed that up, let's look at this. Okay, so again, the most influential company more than the government. And that's because they're pulling the strings inside the government. So Team Obama, Biden, what are we talking about here? Well, you probably are already aware, if you're not, welcome to the world. The government is sort of like a revolving door with corporations, corporatism. So the corporations go into the government goes back to the corporations, and they have this revolving door. So if you're working at a pharmaceutical company like Pfizer, for example, then you go work in the FDA, and then you work in the FDA for a while, then you go back to Pfizer or whatever food company. And then the same in, you know, Goldman Sachs goes to work for the government, government goes back to Goldman Sachs. And this is exactly what happens with BlackRock. So now they've taken all the people that used to be at BlackRock and they've put them into the most powerful positions in the government. I'm gonna break this down for you. Now we have, let's start with Brian Deese here, for example. You might remember this guy, Brian Deese. He kind of went viral because on television, I'm going to show you a clip in a second, on television he said the reason why gas prices are so high and people need to get used to it is because we have to protect the new liberal world order. So you might remember that. And who is Brian Deese? Well, he is National Economic Council under Joe Biden. He was the inaugural chair of the White House Competition Council, but it goes back. He previously served as senior advisor to President Obama. So he was there with Obama. This is why I'm saying Obama-Biden, follow along. And Deese served as the global head of sustainable investments at BlackRock. So he worked for Obama as a senior advisor to Obama. Then he went to go work at BlackRock in sustainable investing. And now he's back in the Biden. So that's Brian Deese. We can see here, the next one up, we have Wally Adimo, and he is the United States Deputy Secretary of the Treasury. So pretty powerful, Deputy Secretary of the Treasury. The first president of the Obama Foundation, so he worked for the Obama Foundation for a while. Also served during the Obama administration as the Deputy National Security Advisor, pretty high up. And he was the Deputy Director of the National Economic Council. So he worked under the Obama administration, and now he's second in command at the Treasury under the Biden administration. But Mark, what about BlackRock? Well, let's take a look at that. We can see here, he also worked at BlackRock for 2 years, serving as senior advisor and chief of staff for the firm's CEO, Larry Fink. So he worked second in command to Larry Fink, Obama, second in command to Larry Fink at BlackRock, and now second in command at the U.S. Treasury. Pretty powerful. He served as the United States Deputy Secretary of the Treasury in the Biden administration. He's heavily involved in sanctions enforcement. Okay, so pretty powerful. The revolving door runs deep. We have good old Michael Pyle. So he's also a BlackRock alum. He developed neoliberal policies for Obama. So he worked under the Obama administration. Then he went to work for BlackRock, and now he's working under the Vice President, Harris, as the Chief Economist. So he's the Chief Economist, a pretty high position for the Vice President, after working under Obama and BlackRock. So you can see these people are all embedded themselves in there. Now, what about President Biden himself? Well, we can see, now I know a lot of you guys question some of my news sources. You can just pause this, get any of this text, and just Google search it. You'll find the exact source for this. This comes from The Atlantic, which is a left, very left-leaning publication. And they talk about here about Biden, what he said himself. So in January before Biden ran for office, he went to the New York offices of BlackRock, the major investment firm, for a meeting with Larry Fink, the CEO. So Biden went to go see Larry Fink, the CEO, the kingmaker, before he decided if he was going to run for president. Fink said to Biden, quote, "I'm here to help." What does that mean? Well, put me in. I'll run your staff for you. I'll run your economic policy for you, whatever you want to call it. Biden took it as an offer to sign on with the campaign. So he brought Larry Fink on to fill a bunch of positions, and Biden decided to run for office. And of course, he's the president of the United States now. Now, let's watch this video real quick so you can understand there's something much bigger at play. Let's go ahead and roll this clip.
This is about the future of the liberal world order, and we have to stand firm.
Our careful, and I mean careful, attention to building and sustaining the liberal international world order with the United States and Europe at its core.
And now is a time when things are shifting. There's going to be a new world order out there, and we've got to lead it. And we've got to unite the rest of the free world.
Because now, progressively, a lot of people would like to see there are two orders in this world. This is a huge mistake, even for both the U.S. and China. We need a single global order.
All right, so you can see the new world order, the liberal world order. We need to keep one world order. I wanted to show you this clip to show you how important all this is. The Obama-Biden campaign administration, together with the Davos Euro administration, they're all working collectively. That the last clip was President Macron of France saying we need to have just one global superpower. We can't have two. Now, probably below on this video, there's probably a warning. This came on the video of YouTube videos that I actually pulled this from, saying that the New World Order is a conspiracy theory. Well, I just showed you video clips of them actually saying it themselves. So if President Macron and Biden and Brian Deese are part of it, maybe they're part of the conspiracy theorists, I don't know. But that is a disclaimer. I don't know why. All right, now, evading oversight. So how is it that BlackRock has been able to get so big and evade oversight? Well, one, they control all the main positions under the president's administration. But also, they're evading oversight because technically, they're not a bank. So in the 2008 great financial crisis, the crash, we had lots of banking reform that happened. But that applies to banks. But BlackRock is not technically a bank because they don't actually make loans and they don't take customer deposits. So they sort of evade that. There was a congressional push to include asset managers like BlackRock, such as BlackRock and Vanguard funds under the post-2008 Dodd-Frank law as, quote, systematically important financial institutions, or SIFIs. A huge lobbying push from BlackRock ended it. So the government wanted to bring asset managers in there because they're too big to fail. If they go down, the largest asset manager in the world, $10 trillion, that's going to cause massive pain. So they wanted to bring them in under this act, but of course, massive lobbying pushed it back. Nope, we don't want the oversight. Now, it's not just in the United States that they have the influence. It's not just at the Fed. It's not just in the presidential administration. It's overseas as well. So here we have Stanley Fischer. He was the vice chair. Well, first of all, he's an Israeli-American, dual citizen, Israel and American. He was the vice chair of the Federal Reserve from 2014 to 2017. And he was also the governor of the Bank of Israel. So governor of Bank of Israel and the Federal Reserve of the United States. He held both positions. He previously served as first deputy at the IMF, International Monetary Fund, and chief economist of the World Bank. Some pretty big global influence there. Barack Obama nominated Fischer to be vice chairman of the Federal Reserve Board, which we talked about, and he's also a senior advisor at BlackRock. IMF, World Bank, Bank of Israel, Federal Reserve, Obama, you get it. Massive cooperation internationally with Israel and the United States and BlackRock. We have Hildebrand right here. He's a Swiss banker and he's vice chairman of BlackRock. So he was a Swiss banker and he's with BlackRock. He was the head of the Swiss Central Bank, the Swiss National Bank, and part of the group of students that went through the World Economic Forum in Davos, the Young Global Leaders. World Economic Forum, works at BlackRock, and the Swiss National Bank, the Swiss Central Bank. Are you starting to see this? We also have Gene Bovin, head of the BlackRock Investment Institute, leverages BlackRock's expertise and produces proprietary research, or probably through his buddy-buddy connections. He served as deputy governor of the Bank of Canada. So now we have the Bank of Switzerland, we have Israel, we have Canada, we have the United States. Okay, so you see all the connections in all these different governments and central banks. What about the Federal Reserve themselves? Well, they put a brand new team into place, and the BlackRock got in bed with the Federal Reserve to create a bailout plan before there was even a crisis. So you may not be aware, I'm going to show you in a second, how involved they were on the pandemic crisis. But what you probably don't know is that the plan for the bailout for the crisis actually happened before the actual crisis itself. So let's take a look at that. We can see here that there's a plan called Going Direct, they call it. And that's the financial bailout plan that was designed and authored by former central bankers and people that are now on the payroll at BlackRock. So they used to work at the Fed, now they work at BlackRock. They authored this plan called Going Direct. The plan was rolled out in August of 2019 at the G7 Summit of Central Bankers in Jackson Hole, Wyoming. They meet there every single year, months before the public was aware of any financial crisis. So you weren't aware of the financial crisis, but they were, the G7 countries meeting, and they put this plan into place. The BlackRock plan, as it's called, calls for blurring the lines between government fiscal policy and central bank monetary policy. It says BlackRock has now been hired by the Federal Reserve, by the Bank of Canada, and by Switzerland's central bank. Didn't we just say that they had people from Canada and from Switzerland and the Fed there? Yeah, so they were hired by the Fed, by the Bank of Canada, and by the Sweden Central Bank to implement key features of this new plan that they authored. I wonder if it might be favorable for them. Let's keep digging in. The authors wrote, quote, "In a downturn, the only solution for a more formal and historically unusual coordination of monetary and fiscal policy is to provide effective stimulus." Now, effective, meaning we need to put the stimulus into the right place. What would be considered the right place? Oh, in the assets that we control. Maybe. Let's take a look and see if that's right. Well, what we can see here is that when the pandemic broke out, it says that this all mediated through the financial system. The Fed buys the ETFs from the big banks, and they are using a sponsor. They have to use a sponsor because the Fed can't buy this directly. So they have to use a middleman or a sponsor. In this case, an asset manager, giant. Oh, like BlackRock, the author of the bill. Surprising, right? It says, here's a convenient list of the sales from the banks and the ETFs being held. I don't have that list ready for you, but all the ETFs. And of course, who runs most of the ETFs? That would be BlackRock. iShares. If you've seen the word iShares appearing, it shows up in 8 of the ETFs listed. Those are BlackRock, all right? That's BlackRock. It says, of the $1.58 billion in holdings, half of it, $746 million, came from BlackRock ETFs. So they got the money from the Fed to put into the system, and where did it go? To buy their own ETFs, of course. So BlackRock, as the sponsor, as the middleman, spending the government, spending the Fed's money, as the sponsor for the Fed, made 47% of its purchases in BlackRock ETFs. Of course they did. Why wouldn't they? Would you be surprised? Of course not. Now, it's not just the BlackRock ETFs that did good. As a matter of fact, it says investors knowing that the Fed is about to buy a lot of BlackRock iShares investment grade corporate bonds, ETFs, also known as LQD, they dumped $1 billion into it in anticipation. So the investors saw that BlackRock was in a situation knowing they would probably put their own that money into their own assets. And so investors piled in front running what BlackRock was doing. Sure enough, the biggest holding in this initial set of Fed purchases happened to be LQD, which is, of course, BlackRock's ETF. Now, executives at BlackRock know where those purchases went before the public. Of course, they're the ones making the decisions, putting the money. They don't tell you until the quarterly filing comes out. So they knew before it went public. It says that May 29th release just went out, and the next one won't be out until June 29th. So they could trade on any purchases made in late May well before they are publicly released. So they're trading on all this information, or what you may consider insider information, well before, months before it's released to the public. Now, you would think that would be illegal. Remember, Martha Stewart went to jail for insider trading, but it says here that senior executives are exempt from this cooling off period and will have instant access to this market moving information. So, you know, just like the people in the Senate and the House, like the lawmakers, the legislators, they're exempt. Well, the senior executives, they're also exempt. They get to trade their own book before you know about it. The arrangement benefits the company in a number of ways. It benefits them in a lot of ways, to be honest here. First, the Fed buys its ETFs directly. Second, the rest of the market plows into those ETFs, anticipating that the Fed's going to purchase them. So first, they get to buy them. Then they get the market to come in and buy them on top of it. Third, there are executives that sit above the company's firewalls and may have access to information about all of these transactions before they happen. Sounds pretty good, doesn't it? Well, it sounds good if you're BlackRock and they're senior executives. What we can see here is that Fed Chair Jerome Powell, buddy with Larry Fink, the CEO, had 4 private phone calls with BlackRock CEO since March, as BlackRock manages upwards of, it manages 25 million of Jerome Powell's personal money. And then it landed 3 no-bid deals with the Fed. So it won the bid with the Fed to receive all this money and place it out there, no bid, meaning they didn't take other bids. There was no competition. So BlackRock, Larry Fink, meets with Jerome Powell, manages Jerome Powell's money, and then Jerome Powell gives him 3 no-bid contracts to take the money and do as they see fit. Jerome Powell doubled his money. I think he went from $11 million to $25 million in that year that this all happened. All right, so very lucrative for him. But what about us? Well, we'll get to that in a minute. We'll show you what BlackRock says is going to happen next year so we can be prepared. We can get on the inside. But let's dig a little bit further, first of all. The World Economic Forum, we talk about this all the time, and their, of course, Great Reset plan. Now, BlackRock and Larry Fink go deep with the World Economic Forum. As a matter of fact, you can see lots of pictures. Larry Fink is there speaking at every event. In 2019, Larry Fink and BlackRock joined the board of the World Economic Forum, and they pushed the World Economic Forum's sustainable ESG goals. Now, I've talked about this a lot before. The sustainable development goals are the same that the United Nations has had in the 2030 Agenda for Sustainable Development. This is not conspiracy theory. This is directly off the United Nations website. Go look it up. They have an agenda by 2030 to do these things under sustainable development. And it's the same, but a little bit different of what the World Economic Forum is doing. Now, what they're doing is they're using the capital markets, or they're using the asset managers like BlackRock to push this through the banking system. Now, we can see Mark Carney, arguably the most connected guy, maybe behind Larry Fink, previous head of Bank of Canada, Bank of England, UN Special Envoy, and for the World Economic Forum as well. In his book, he said that in the new world, it will be severely constrained with choice. You're going to have less flying, you're going to have less meat, and you're going to have more inconvenience. In his agenda, the objectives are, in fact, already being enforced. So these objectives of the Sustainable Development Goals, they're already being enforced, not by legislations. They're not passing laws, not democratic elections, not passing laws, not by legislation, but by the application of non-governmental, that is, non-democratic, you didn't vote for it, pressure on the corporate sector by what's called sustainable finance. So Larry Fink's got the money, and if you want it, then you better meet his objectives of sustainable finance, designed to starve non-compliant companies of funds, thus rendering them, as Carney puts it, quote, climate roadkill. A key instrument is, of course, stakeholder capitalism. So if we take a look at stakeholder capitalism, BlackRock's Larry Fink on the launch of a center for stakeholder capitalism. So he says we have to harness the power of both the public and the private sectors. Back to fascism or corporatism. They're saying it right here. They just don't call it that. They call it public and private. Same thing, right? But what is the Center for Stakeholder Capitalism? Well, on the World Economic Forum website, you can see I have the logo right here. You can find this handy matrix right here. And so we have what we call considered capitalism, or shareholder capitalism, they call it, is that the business is there to increase profits and for the shareholders, the owners. Yeah, surprise. Owners start a business to give themselves profit. But what they wanted to have is what's called stakeholder capitalism, where all stakeholders matter equally. Now, what's all stakeholders? Well, they say that the community and the environment and the world all has a stake in what this business does. And so now this business can't just be out for its owners or its shareholders. Now it has to be following the guidelines of all the stakeholders, which is basically everybody in the world. Well, how do you quantify that? How do you quantify what the demands are? Well, you need a measurable objective, and that's called ESG. And so they have to be environmental, socially, and they have to have proper governance. Now, what do those entail? Well, it entails whatever they say. So net zero, Black Lives Matter, woke capital, no fossil fuels, whatever it happens to be, and those are quantifiable. And if you don't meet those criteria, then you become economic roadkill, as they say. So this is what's happening. This is the agenda. And it's scary. Like I said, the plan is already cracking apart. It's already cracked. There's lots of pushback where people are pushing back with their money. They're pulling their money away from evil corporations like BlackRock. And you should too. Don't give them your money. Learn to manage it on your own or give it to other asset managers. There's one that's recently popped up called Strive Asset Management that's trying to compete against BlackRock and has your better interests, or manage your money on your own. There's options there. But it also highlights how we can push back and win on this if we vote with our money, or what I'm calling building out the parallel economy. I'll talk about that in a minute. All right, but BlackRock's forecast. What do they say is going to happen in 2023? We want to know. because we want to front run it or invest along with them so we can get rich like Jay Powell, right? So they say that there's a new regime coming. Now, I say this all the time. The world we're going into is not the same as the world we're leaving behind. So what is this new regime? The four-decade period, the last 40 years, of largely stable activity and inflation is now behind us. So whatever's happened the last 40 or 50 years, that was a once-in-a-lifetime period. That's over. So we're not going back to that, all right? The new regime of greater economic and market volatility is now playing out. So what do we expect in the future, next year and beyond? Lots more volatility, lots of prices going up and down, a lot more shortages of products, market volatility, all that. And it says here that central banks are deliberately causing recessions. This is BlackRock. BlackRock says this. Central banks are deliberately causing recessions. And of course, Jay Powell tells us this all the time, that his goal is to crush demand or make you feel broke. It says here, a key feature of this new regime, the one that we're going into, remember, whatever your financial advisor tells you, just invest for the long term, stay in the market, 60-40 bond split. That's all old. That was for the old regime. There's a new regime. You have to get on board with this. We are in a world shaped by production constraints. So the world is going to have a lot more production constraints moving forward, a lot more supply chain restrictions. We're going to have a lot more onshoring, nearshoring. All of this has to get rebuilt. That's why inflation is so high. And that's why I talk about all the time. I believe that this might be some of the lowest inflation we'll see for the rest of the decade. Now, nothing goes up or down in a straight line. So inflation goes up, comes down a little bit, up, 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 and down. All right, so that's part of the new regime. Now, what else? They also said that you have to understand that there's a brutal trade-off coming. So central bank policy rates are not the tool to resolve production constraints. So the reason why prices went up on food and on oil was not because there was too much demand. There weren't too many buyers of it. It's that the production constraints, we had a drop in supply. Now the central banks, their policy rates are not the tool to fix that. If we have a shortage of supply, the goal would be to get more supply, but they can't get more supply. So they're trying to crush demand. But as BlackRock said, that's not the tool. So they're gonna have to trade off one or the other. They're either gonna get inflation back to 2% targets by either crushing demand, so that means crushing your retirement account, crushing the value of your home by crushing demand, or they're gonna have to live with more inflation. And that's my bet. I believe the Fed is gonna just live with more inflation. They're gonna have to. That's the world that we're going into. All right, so we're gonna have more inflation. We know the world's gonna change. Part of the reason why, three main factors are this, I've been talking about this in many videos. We see three long-term trends keeping production capacity constrained. One, aging populations. This is one of the greatest problems that we're facing moving forward, is that the populations in the developed world, China's the worst, most of Europe is really bad, the US is looking a little bit better, but most of the developed world has aging populations that are going to time out. We don't have enough young people coming up, and so what we're really facing is population decline. That means continued worker shortages in many major economies, which leads to supply constraints. We're also, number two, persistent geopolitical tensions. What's happening with Russia and Ukraine, what's happening in China, Taiwan, what's happening with Israel, Iran, this is not, again, just something new that's gonna be resolved and we're gonna go back to normal. No, we're gonna continue to have geopolitical tensions. We're breaking from a centralized world into a decentralized world, into a multipolar world. That's gonna continue. It's gonna rewire globalization and supply chains, pushing inflation back up. Number three, the transition of net zero carbon emissions. They're gonna continue to try to shut down our cheap and readily available fossil fuel supply and move us to inconsistent, unreliable, and very expensive green energies. So they're gonna continue to do this transition, which is gonna cause energy supply and demand mismatches. Energy supply and demand mismatches. When there's supply-demand mismatches, what happens? Oh yeah, prices go back up. When the price of energy goes up, everything goes up. If I'm a factory manufacturing widgets, but my energy prices go up, my widget price goes up as well. So what worked in the past isn't gonna work anymore. The world we're going into is not the one we're leaving behind. That's what I keep saying. All right, so what do we do about this? Mark, you're giving me the problem. The world's gonna change. All right, we're going to a new regime. What am I gonna do? How do I front run this? Well, there's a couple things. First of all, there's a new playbook. And so we need new tools. I believe there's a new world being built. And there's this giant opportunity in the parallel economy. So the way that we invest is gonna be different. also the business opportunities are gonna be different. I'm gonna hold a 3-day event where I'm gonna have a bunch of speakers and panelists and experts and explain what this new parallel economy is, how you can take advantage of it, how you can invest in it, how you can convert your business or start a new business. I think it's the biggest opportunity that we have. And it's how we push back on this. So this is how BlackRock is starting to crumble right now, because parallel structures are being built like Strive Asset Management. So I'm gonna, there's a link down below if you wanna check it out. 3 days, we're gonna go through all this. I'm gonna tell you all about this opportunity and how to invest in it. So if you really wanna know. However, what are we gonna do with our investments? Well, there's a new playbook, and this is again from BlackRock. So the one thing that we have to know is that there's gonna be more frequent changes. This is per BlackRock. So the days of, again, time in the market, just put it in there, wait for 50 years, buy your index funds, 60-40 bond split, that's over, right? That's over. That's the old regime. The new regime is there's going to be more frequent changes. There's going to be massive volatility. And so we need to be able to in and out. We need to go long, we need to go short. We need to be able to ride the waves of volatility. We also have to have new investment strategies. So those new investment strategies are, again, not just throwing in a 60-40 portfolio or a mutual fund and just sitting back for 40 years. Now we need to have more granular views. So right now, energy is doing really good, or maybe commodities will do really good. Tech is down, right? And so instead of being so broadly focused, we're gonna have to look very granular at things. Even with real estate, it's not gonna be real estate in the United States, it's gonna be, what about Tampa, Florida versus San Francisco, California? San Francisco is the worst real estate in the nation right now. Tampa, Florida is one of the best. And so we're gonna have to look at it much more granularly. We're gonna have to look at sectors, so energy, specifically uranium, for example, specifically in enrichment or whatever, and we have to look at regions, Tampa, Florida versus San Francisco. We also need to look at sub-asset classes. So again, energy, but not just energy, how about uranium, right? And not just uranium, but how about this new company that's building these uranium reactors, for example. So sub-asset classes, not broad exposure. Now they give us a couple playbooks that we can take a look at. So it says right here, we are here. So right now, they say that there is not enough damage in the price. So what's gonna happen? So remember, they said that the central banks are trying to crash the markets. They're saying that it is not priced in yet. So that means they believe there's going to be more drawdowns in the markets. So risk-off damage is not priced in, is what they're saying right here. And so in the equities market, that's stocks, they're short. In the credit markets, they believe that they're a little bit positive on that. Now we can look at a little bit more granular view if you wanna look at stocks and equities. Now we can see, for the most part, they're short all of that. In developed markets, they're short, they're underweight. The United States, they're short or underweight. In Europe, they're underweight. In the UK, they're underweight. In Japan, China, emerging markets, and Asia, they're neutral. So They're a little bit neutral. They're not really bullish or positive on any of the equities, neutral on a few countries, and underweight on most of the developed countries. That was developed markets, United States, Europe, and the UK. So that's the plan. You need to be tactically managing your portfolio. I've been writing a financial newsletter for 5 years now called the Tactical Asset Report, so it kind of fits in with what we're doing. But that's it. That's the plan. There's a new regime. Now, if you wanna download these slides, there's a link down below if you wanna go through and look at it a little bit deeper. Otherwise, let me know what you think. BlackRock, it's scary, massive influence. I believe their plans will fail, but they're very influential right now. And if they're saying this is where the market's going, I tend to believe them, and I'm adjusting my portfolio, but will you? Let me know in the comments down below. Of course, as always, give me a thumbs up on this video if you like it. If you don't, you can give me a thumbs down, that's okay. But at least tell me why in the comments, and that's what I got. To your success. I'm out.